10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needs something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.
Second hour, Darren Donick and Chase, brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joints, smoother than smooth. Darren McFarland and Willie Donick here with you. Chase McCabe is off today. It was an historical night, Friday night, as Nashville SC got it done, shutting out Miami 3-0 in the Eastern Conference play-in round, and they continue on today against Toronto FC. And boy, wish it was a little bit different, but the 3,500 fans, roughly, that were there on Friday. What a great crowd. And joining us now is a guy we always enjoy talking to, ESPN's soccer analyst, MLS analyst, Taylor Twellman, former player, is now with us. Taylor, how you doing?
Good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing fantastic. By the way, you were not in Nashville, right? Were you doing it from a studio?
Yeah. So we, obviously with the pandemic and everything going on, we do everything from Connecticut. Both John Champion and I reside in Boston. So 2-hour drive, go down, do the game in a closet, and come back.
How has that adjustment been, that transition been this year doing that?
I mean, I'm not going to sit here and really complain, because I feel fortunate that the players and technical staffs and owners have somehow put a product on the field. But is it different? Yeah. I mean, listen, even if I was in Nashville Friday night, those 3,500 fans that were there, I would have taken that energy and gotten energy from it. You don't get that. But on the other hand, I have a ton of experience doing games off monitor from, around the world that we broadcast here, right? Whether we do Euro qualifiers, World Cup qualifiers, sometimes we do U.S. games, from Connecticut instead of flying over there. So it's not my first rodeo. Hear those fans in Nashville, we saw it over the weekend in Orlando City and in Kansas City. It just is a reminder of what we're missing, and I can't wait to get that back.
Yeah, look, we're all there with you. In fact, I remember that show. Willie, if you remember, we were on Demumbrian, and I think we were at Tin Roof, and we had Taylor on right before that game against Atlanta United, the first ever MLS game in Nashville SC history, they had almost 60,000 at Nissan Stadium, and just where we are. That was back in, February? Little did we know what was just around the corner, Taylor.
It was actually leap year, which is my birthday, and I was in L.A. prepping for the opener of LAFC versus Inter Miami. I was walking outside to have breakfast. That feels like 14 years ago.
it really certainly does. That is a good memory, and by the way, you are absolutely correct, and you're right. It does feel like a long, long time ago. Let me just start real quick, because I think I told you this back when we've talked to you in the past. Look, we are not the experts. We're learning. We're a new market, and we're those guys that are trying. We're learning. We're not the experts. That's why we have you on. You brought up Euros and the other leagues around the world. Just for people who are like us, who are trying to learn, how different, or is it different, when you watch the MLS product and you watch the other leagues around the world? Is there a lot of similarities, or is it a completely different product?
Oh, no. The game's universal around the world. There's a reason why it's the number one sport around the world, because everyone plays it, right? But there's different nuances. There's different beliefs. There's different ways to express, how you want to play the sport. Whether you're in Italy, whether you're in England, Germany, or whatnot. So, I mean, heck, guys, you can have two leagues in England and they'd be completely different, right? So I would say this. The league has grown exponentially over the last 5-6 years because of the influx of a higher-level, more expensive player in this league that has helped the league grow a lot faster than many of us that played in this league 10, 12, 15 years ago didn't think would happen, right? So that's the one way I would describe it. Is Major League Soccer on the level of the Premier League or the Bundesliga? No. But is it as far away as I hear some people say? No, it's not. And so with everything, you gotta let it grow. The problem here in America is we want it tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
We want it now. Mm-hmm. And so the harder thing about that is a lot of these leagues have, you know, over 100 years of history, where Major League Soccer is in its 25th year. So the growth has been much faster. Who knows what that means post-pandemic? I don't know that answer. You guys don't know that answer. But it's a better product than many people give it credit for.
When you've watched Nashville SC this season, through your soccer eyes, what do you see?
I see a team that's exceeded expectations from the outside. I see a team that has real belief. I see a manager that has pushed all the right buttons to get a team that many of us on the outside thought would take maybe a little bit longer to get going. I don't think they embrace their identity as well as they should. You know, Gary Smith is a very good manager of building a team and building a foundation from back to front. And they've done that. Guys, they only scored 10 goals from open play this year. So it's not as if they're the most expansive team. And yet when you watch them over the last 6-7 weeks going into it, the confidence is there. Look at the goals they scored against Miami, some of the best goals you'll see in this entire playoff run. This is a team that believes in itself. They built it the right way in going to get the Walker Zimmermans and the Dax McCartys and Adebayo Godoys and Joe Willises of the world. And it's a good team. It's a much better team, like I said, than many of us thought. And they've got every opportunity to give it to Toronto. Now, the difficult part for them is whether or not Godoy is going to be healthy, which I doubt he will be. So someone's going to have to step in there and fill that void. But this is a team that's very good defensively, great on set pieces. And oftentimes in these one-off games, that can be the difference.
Taylor, I'm glad you brought up Gary Smith. We've gotten to know him a little bit, and, man, he is great for this community, this market, for people like us to talk to. He doesn't talk down to you. He's a great guy to deal with. But at the time, you know, the USL, you don't know, is he going to translate? Is he going to slide over with them whenever? Because MLS happened quickly. And was that a move that surprised people, or did that is a move that make it made sense to us? But what about the soccer experts? Did they think Gary Smith was going to be the guy leading them into MLS play?
I don't know if we thought he would. I mean, I think we're understating Gary Smith's previous run with Colorado, winning an MLS Cup, but that league is so different than the league now, right? So when he was hired, it was very understated. I think a lot of people are like, oh, okay. And I don't think that was fair to Gary Smith, because I think, as anything, coaching's a craft, and you can grow and you can evolve, and I've seen that with Gary. And I think he's embraced that learning part and that learning curve. Now, listen, Ingram and the ownership group absolutely wanted to do this very pragmatically and wanted to use the USL. They hired Mike Jacobs, who's done a wonderful job of building this roster. But was it headline stuff the way Atlanta did or LAFC? No, but that doesn't mean it's not successful. And that's the hard one, I think, from my point of view. It's like it's almost like they're defending what they're doing, and I don't think they need to. You made the playoffs. You're on the up and up. You've built a foundation for year one to year two, year three growth. Why not embrace it? But it's almost like they're having to defend what they did, and I just don't think you have to do that. You have to embrace what you are and what you've done, and you've done so much so far, and you've got an opportunity to upset Toronto tonight. Anyone underestimating Nashville tonight is going to be surprised.
We're talking to Taylor Twellman. He is, of course, an ESPN soccer analyst. He was on the call for Nashville's first ever postseason win. Now, tonight, they try to pull the upset against Toronto. So, Taylor, you've led us right into it. Give us the key. I know you were talking about how they sort of had the upper hand with Miami's issues with the COVID. They could sort of take the game to Miami. But we have seen, as you mentioned before, the Gary Smith, they've had a good formula of trying to win the game 1-0. So to speak. Is that how they're going to have to try to go about it tonight? What's the gap between Nashville and Toronto on paper?
Well, on paper, it's apples to oranges. And anyone listening that takes offense to that, I'm sorry, that's just objective. There's no subjective point. You look at the amount of money that Toronto spends, the experienced players that they spend, all that. That's fine. What you can't measure, though, is where the group is collectively. And so just because you have the individual players, quite honestly, Miami individually may have a more talented team. If you ask Gary Smith right now, now granted, you know, Higuain and Gonzalez Pires didn't play. I understand that. But Pizarro, Matuidi, Will Trapp, you know, you look at the, some of the guys that played, Figal, you're talking about some real quality players. So it, the best part about this game, the reason why I love this game, it's it, you can have the best player in the world, Messi, and never win a World Cup. So it's not like basketball where one player makes literally the difference.
Right.
And so Nashville tonight has to collectively be greater than their individual parts, which is more often the case with them. They don't give up a ton of goals, which is why I say to everyone, on paper you look at it and say, oh, Toronto could win this game 2-3-0. No, they're not going to. Unless there's a freaky situation of a red card of some sort, they're not. And Nashville's very, very good on set pieces. First in Major League Soccer, tied with Sporting Kansas City. And so I think you're going to get a real tight game, a difficult game. I think Toronto could get frustrated. If Toronto gets an early goal, then it's a very difficult situation for Nashville. But if this game gets to halftime, with Nashville with a lead or 0-0, that plays into Gary Smith's hands.
Taylor, what's the atmosphere been like for Toronto? When I travel with the Predators, we drive right by the soccer stadium, and from what I could see and what I've seen with the renderings of Nashville's stadium, they're going to build a similar type of facility. It's a great facility, but of course we know they haven't been able to play in Toronto. So what are we going to see tonight playing at, over at the UConn football stadium? What have they been able to do?
Yeah, it's, you know,
it's not ideal.
It's,
I know,
November 24, 2020, so hopefully there's better acoustics for some stadium. I have no idea.
Will they have fans? You know, have they been having a percentage of fans in the stadium?
Yeah, they have. They have. So I actually went to a game. I'm going to get the date wrong, so I'm not even going to do it. Early November, Toronto played Inter-Miami. I wanted to see it. There was probably you know, 2,500, 3,000 people there. Maybe a little less because the weather was bad. But that, you know, it's what a normal atmosphere is in 2020 is the best way to describe it. Will it be like Orlando City or Kansas City, what we saw over the weekend? Absolutely not.
Hmm. So does that, do you think that helps Nashville's chances for the upset in any way?
No, because everyone's been playing in this similar type of situation, right? If it was like Orlando City was over the weekend, then I'm saying it's hostile. And because Orlando City, you talk to New York City, it felt like a real game, not during a pandemic. That place was loud. They had a ton of fans, right? So, no, I don't think it suits either one.
Last thing for you, Taylor. One thing you guys made note of, you had Gary Smith mic'd up during the game. And I noticed in some of your post-game commentary, you were talking about his style compared to other coaches out there. Very vocal during the game.
Very vocal. That was actually my partner, John Champion, did that. He only did that because he's an Englishman. Gary's an Englishman. And so I love when the English just love to talk about the English. So if I'm laying it on pretty thick here, if you can't catch my drift, there are, I guess we can't catch my drift. I was being sarcastic. A lot of coaches are loud. A lot of coaches are vocal. Gary's accent is just very unique. And so John Champion, my partner's point was, you can pick out Gary from 60,000 fans in the stands because of that lovely accent that he has, and even the Dax McCartys of the world, I'm sure, have pretty good impersonations.
It's kind of fun. So you can tell in Nashville, this is still kind of new, just the uniqueness of an accent like that. It's still growing on us here, but it's kind of fun. You know, there's soccer going on. We're getting the vibe here. This is great. Taylor, thank you for your insight. As always, you really helped set the table for this entire season, and of course, this game, this very big game tonight. You never know.
No, you never know, and enjoy it. It's been a blast, and hopefully I'm in Nashville sooner rather than later at some point.
All right. Well, I'm pretty sure that'll be the case. Taylor Twellman is with ESPN, does a great job analyzing the MLS. Nashville SC against Toronto tonight up at the UConn football stadium. When we come back, we'll have more of the show here on Darren Donick and Chase. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Always good stuff from Taylor Twellman. Don't forget, you just heard it. Nashville SC in Toronto.
Tonight.
Late afternoon. Really? Toronto FC. It'll be at 5 o'clock our time. 4:45, coverage begins. Match play on ESPN 94.9. So we'll see.
And if you watch it, I believe it is on FS1
that
on
is
TV.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Yeah. That is correct. Or TSN if you get that. You can watch it there.
Yeah, you can get it on TSN if you're north of the border.
Mm-hmm. So did you feel good that the Nashville SC's got a real shot? I thought he laid it out pretty well.
Hey, one game, a soccer game, we know upsets happen. Honestly, when I have watched them play, I always feel like they have a chance because they're going to defend. They're making it tough. Now, you just hope they don't get overrun early. If they fall behind, that's going to be a tough. I don't know if they're talented enough at this point in their first year to come from behind. So just take it minute by minute. Just enjoy it. I'm looking forward to just seeing if they can pull it out. It'd be a great win. This is one of the elite franchises in the MLS. They've done a really good job, Toronto. And you heard Taylor talking about the investment. I just feel really good about the potential of Nashville SC. Just off to a really good start, and I think excellent ownership. Stadium down the road. It's gonna be cool.
Toronto is the second seed on their side of the bracket. Nashville SC is the seventh seed, and so obviously we know Toronto is really good to be the two seed. You know they're really good on their side of the bracket. So we shall see. I was looking at the splits on DraftKings, Willie, and just in case anybody wanted to dabble a little action, the MLS splits for that game in particular. And right now, all the money is on, or the percentage of the money, 78% of the money is on Toronto FC. 76% of the bets are on Toronto FC. And, oh, by the way, only 1% of the money is on them tying. Only 3% of the bets are on them tying. So what does that mean?
Well, you can't tie in this game, can you? Does that mean a regulation tie?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does it go to penalty kicks?
Well, I was looking. It goes on to advances. You go on to penalty kicks. Where, you know, there's already been.
So you can bet that the game will end in a regulation tie?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I've looked. In fact, what was it? Dallas's game went to, like, 8-7 in penalty kicks or something ridiculous?
Yeah, when you say tie, Portland, I'm just thinking this is a playoff game. You can't have a tie.
Well, I'm saying Dallas and Portland had tied in regulation. Sporty KC and San Jose had tied in regulation. There's been already Orlando tied in their game. They won on penalty kicks. So there's already been, what, three matches already that have gone to penalty kicks.
Hmm.
Like I said, Dallas had the crazy one. But, yeah, nobody's really betting on it ending in a tie and going to penalty kicks, which is pretty interesting. But, yeah, so far the money and the bets are going on Toronto. And just to give you a little education, Willie, on this, because, you know, you have come a long way. You thought it used to be the Sharks, the San Jose Sharks, their money. It was the Sharps. And so what you're looking for sometimes is – the more important number is the money. Where's the percentage of the money going? Because typically the money is, if you have a discrepancy in the bets and the money, and tell me if I'm talking over your head here. I'm going to try to slow this down. Sometimes you could actually have a percentage of, let's just say in this case, Toronto is the favorite, right? So you could say that a big portion of the bets are coming in. Let's say 76% of the bets are on Toronto FC. But then you look at it and you're like, but 64% of the money is on Nashville SC. And it's like, huh, how is that possible, right? You're saying most of the bets are going on Toronto, but more money is going on Nashville SC. Typically what that tells you is the sharps, Willie, you know, the pros, the people that do this for a living, they're the ones who typically bet heavy, right? I mean, the Joes, they're the pros. We're all the Joes. I mean, you know, the Joes are not typically the heavy bettors. It's the pros. So you sometimes will see that in the splits where one team has a ton of bets on them, but the other team has more money on them. That means that's probably where you need to be because that's where the pros are. But in this case, it's all on Toronto.
Okay, so the pros and the Joes differ. What about the schmoes?
So are you – you bring that up, would you be a schmo?
I might be a schmo.
Well, I think that's insulting. I think everybody is all Joes, okay?
Okay.
I don't think we should have a separate category for schmoes. I don't know. What are you to get in that category?
What about the does?
Well, does goes back to the sharps.
Okay,
That's the pros.
Now we've come full circle.
The pros have the dough.
The pros have the dough. That's good.
I did see, and if Chase was on the show today, he would want us to pass this along. And even if we didn't, he would bring it up. Charlie Morton has signed a one-year, $15 million deal with the Bravos.
A great move by the Braves for the 1 year, right? Charlie Morton just goes year to year, but he has not really dropped off that much, even if he does a little bit. This is their Cole Hamels, which, of course, kind of blew up in their face. But every now and then that will happen. But worst case, you're only out for the 1 year. You're not making a three-year investment. And of course, Charlie Morton originally with the Braves. Went from the Braves to the Pirates and really never figured it out until a little bit later in his career. And then if you take a look, he's been a late bloomer. He's been extremely consistent for the last, what, five, six, seven seasons at least.
Yep.
One other news story, because that's one of them. The Ravens
that's
do have more COVID tests there.
That's where I was going next. Their facility remains closed. So this will be another day of the facility being closed.
Yikes.
So are they literally going to go from losing to the Titans and then possibly suiting up and just playing on Thursday with no, I mean, other than, I guess, Zoom practice, just meetings? I mean, are they going to do that? Right now, there's no indication that that game is not happening.
Not right now, but you hope it doesn't get to that point. As you said, Darren, what has seemed to have happened recently is teams have popped up with tests here and there, positive tests, but they've managed to avoid having to reschedule games. Of course, with the game being on Thursday, maybe this is a little more challenging here, but we'll have to see how many new tests they have. But, man, that's not good news for the Ravens. And we'd still been pretty quiet on the Titans front in terms of, I know everybody here is saying, okay, has this affected the Titans somehow? So far, not, but, you know, it's only Tuesday.
Not good news on the Browns front. Denzel Ward is going to miss a few weeks. And don't forget, Myles Garrett did not play because he had tested positive, right? He was on the COVID list, and it doesn't look like he's going to play.
Yeah, I think they've already ruled him out.
Yeah, I think they've already ruled him out, so he'll miss his second game. Interesting. So those are some key guys out of the lineup for the Browns, and we will find out after Mike Florio at high noon where did the Browns squeeze in anybody's top 10 with a win over Philadelphia as they remain with the pack. Does anybody believe in them? We'll see. Did they get on a top 10 list, our top 10 list? We shall find out. So what is something, because we need to talk about a little bit more about this Titans-Colts matchup, which, of course, will be yet again for the division lead. Colts coming off a really nice win over the Packers in overtime at home on Sunday. They were down two touchdowns at the half and really dominated the second half. They come in with top-ranked defense in the league. They went into that game the number one defense. I haven't looked since that game. They did give up some points. I don't know if they're still the number one defense overall, but they're a stingy, stingy defense. And, you know, we'll see what this means for the Titans and what did they both learn about each other. Remember, this is going to be their second game in what, 18 days?
I think that's a really intriguing part of this. You don't see that very often. But, yeah, two matchups in a span of three games, that is really something. So adjustments, I would think you're going to hear the word adjustment a lot between now and, and Sunday. What adjustments can the Titans make? And I'm particularly interested on their defense. Is there anything that they can do to force the Colts into having to do it a different way, right? The Colts in that game, I thought, moved the ball about as easily as an average offense could move the ball, right? They just, everything was there. It was like, okay, we're running an offense. You know, how you draw it up, how you envision it, it was perfect, right? Okay, we're going to draw this up. We're going to hit this matchup, third and five. No problem. We just spread it out. This is what we're looking at. They just got it easy, right? It wasn't very contested when you get down to it. And they had a lot of long drives. They kept the ball for a long time. The Titans have to find a way to disrupt that and make that a different story.
There's no doubt about it. And they have got to figure out a way. And they've had this happen in the past. Who was it? Ballard for the Colts? Wasn't it the guy from Mississippi State, right? I mean, they've had these running backs just crush them. And Hines is another guy. They've got to figure out a way to not let this guy destroy them, catching the ball or running the ball, because he did in the first matchup.
He did. They ran the ball very well for them. As we were saying, in the context, they don't have a great offense. I'm looking at their offensive ranking right now. It's the new, you know, updated rankings in Football Outsiders, right? They're 16th, right? It's not. It's an average offense, although it's gotten better the last 2 weeks. And so they're going to come in with a lot of confidence after what they did to the Titans and then to the Packers. They're feeling good. But they ran the ball well. I thought that was a key against the Titans. And they had four drives of double-digit plays, right? Two of them ended in losing the ball on downs. They got stopped on fourth down, but they chewed up a lot of time. They took up a lot of energy, I think, from the Titans' D. And then, of course, there was the collapse on special teams where they got the short field and they punched in them both times. So the Titans against the Ravens made the great stops in the red zone, huge stops in the red zone. Against the Colts, they made none. They cashed it in for touchdowns every time when they were not stopped on fourth down.
Yep. They both score about the same amount of points. I mean, they're right there, points per game. Titans are 27.9. Colts are 27.6. So they're the same team on points per game. Obviously, points allowed per game, the Colts are way better than the Titans on defense. Passing yards, the Colts are better. We know Phillip Rivers likes to sling it around a lot. The Titans are the much better rushing team, but it's interesting because the Colts are very, very stingy against the run. They're way better than the Titans against the run. So the Titans are the much better running team, but the Colts are very stingy about giving up things on the run, even though Derrick Henry did go over 100. Right? That was one of, I think, only two games they've ever lost where he's gone up over 100. And they've lost a game, and that was one of them.
Well, I think that's something to look at for sure. I think they did have to come out of that game encouraged that they ran the ball pretty well against the Colts. But remember, during that game, they lost Saffold. He hasn't come back since. I think we're a little worried that he will. You know, I think right now, if you had to speculate, you'd have to speculate that he doesn't play in this game against the Colts. Although we could be surprised for that, but. We'll see if the offensive line is still in a position with now the injury to Sombrio. Can they still expect to run it well against the Colts? Because that's where everything starts with the Titans offense, right? If they can run it, we know the offense can do their thing. But if they can't run it and they become one-dimensional, they become a lot easier to stop. And then you're saying if you fall behind, that's not what you want, right? That's what happened against the Colts when things kind of unraveled in that third quarter. In the first half, it was unfolding the way you would hope that it unfolded in a lot of ways, right? It wasn't perfect, but they were in position to win the game at the half, and then it all unraveled in the second half.
Yep. Felt like watching a Vols game.
It happened so fast, too, you know?
It usually does for them, too. Happens pretty fast in the second half.
I guess that's true. That is true.
And by the way, let's go on and say that since we left the airwaves yesterday, the much-anticipated game, and I say that because I really was, and I know you were all of us on the show, and Vince was coming into town, Vince Ferrar, who we talked to yesterday. This was going to be a really interesting game, which 4 or 5 weeks ago, you would have said, no chance. 5 weeks ago, no chance. Vanderbilt looked like they were just going to be the worst team in the SEC, and yes, they're still winless, but they're getting better every single week. They are in games now. They look completely different than what they looked like 5 weeks ago. Meanwhile, we know Tennessee, off to the 2-0 start, has lost five in a row, and they're going the absolute wrong direction. So this was, I thought, an intriguing matchup because, man, it was going to have quite the storyline. If Derek Mason and Vanderbilt found a way to win again, which, by the way, Vince yesterday predicted at the time we thought they were going to be playing here on Saturday evening, that Tennessee would lose that game. He has predicted the Vols games correctly all season. And he picked Vanderbilt to win. Well, it wasn't that long after our show that that game has been switched, the old switcheroo. And Tennessee and Vanderbilt are not going to play on Saturday. Instead, the Commodores will play Missouri on Saturday.
And
isn't that weird?
It's at Missouri.
They go from a home game to a road game.
And I don't know all of the details of how they arrived at all of the matchups. It was a league-wide decision by the SEC. And I guess this is just how you have to roll. It was disappointing. Like you were thinking, I think for Vanderbilt this was their last home game. You had the parents coming in, senior day, and now all of a sudden that's gone. Like anybody who made reservations, you know, for Thanksgiving and whatnot, that had to be completely torn up and changed because now the game is in Columbia, Missouri, and it's not senior day. And I wonder, too, what is it going to look like in a couple weeks? Are they going to be able to reschedule the game? I certainly hope so. The league hopes so. And how different will each team look? Right? I think you might be able to say Harrison Bailey will be the quarterback by the time. It could be fully entrenched with a couple games under his belt by then.
Could be.
As opposed to this week where he might have been his first. Now, you could also say for Vanderbilt, one of their emerging best players, Keon Henry Brooks, maybe he's back and healthy by the time that game gets played, whereas I don't know if he'd be ready to go this Saturday. Maybe Ken Seals continues to improve and the offense keeps getting better and better, and they're a better team by then. I don't know, but as Derek Mason says every week when he's on with us, you're one test away, right? You're one test away from losing several people, right, because of contact tracing and all of that stuff. So you just keep your fingers crossed and you hope that you can play as many games as you could possibly play. Missouri, you know, they're a very tough team to figure out, right? So maybe Vanderbilt's got a shot to stay competitive and have a chance to win that one. You never know.
Well, the way they're playing, yeah. Ken Seals keeps getting better and better. Yeah, why, I mean, they've been very competitive the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, they have. They've been much more competitive, but they had so far to come, right? It's all like they need to be able to find a way to get in position to win a game, right? They still haven't really been able to dictate things in a fourth quarter yet. You know, they've been behind a gigantic percentage of the time. Now they're not down by 17 as much. They're down by more like 7. So they're in games. Like against Florida, I admired that they kept battling, right? They were not the better team. They were way, way less talented up and down, but they fought. You know, they got a turnover. They had a chance to maybe get within 7 points or so in the fourth quarter. They almost had it, but they're just not quite good enough against that team. But now can they, against maybe a middle-tiered team or a lower-tiered team in Missouri, can that be different? Well, that's the next point in the growth. That's, in my mind, that's Derek Mason's best shot of continuing to be the coach, right? They've got to keep taking steps forward. At the end of the year, if they're 0-10, that's not going to look good. But if they can show improvement from the start of the year to the end of the year, freshman quarterback, you know, maybe he gets another year. I don't know how Vanderbilt fans feel about that, but I think that's, if you're battling for your job, You got to find a way to win a game or two here.
Derek Mason said Vanderbilt has moved its practice from morning to afternoon today. There's no classes to allow more game prep after learning their opponent had changed. So Derek Mason saying that today, he was addressing the media.
I'm sure there were some scouts, you know, some assistant coaches putting together the game plan that were like, say what? Say what? We're playing Missouri? Take all that we did the last – I mean, I'm sure they were spending, you know, the last 2 days, Sunday and Monday. They probably spent hours and hours and hours putting together a game plan, and now it's completely scrapped.
Well, that's already happened to a lot of teams in college. Well, I mean, that happened to Cal, right? They were scheduled to play, what was it, Washington? Whoever it was, that game was canceled, and they played somebody else. They played Colorado or something. It just happened. I mean, that we've already seen that, and that wasn't the only example of that, where they didn't play and then their opponent just changed on them. It's got to be – I mean, that just goes along lines of what we've just been talking about. I mean, that's 2020, man. We have never thought we would see where you would be talking about a matchup this weekend, and the next day on the show you would be talking about a completely different matchup. I mean, there's never in a million years you would think that would ever happen on a sports talk radio show. I mean, it's never happened before, right? We have never, ever talked about that before. And this year – we're seeing it happen all the time. You can imagine what it's like for the coaches as they're getting prepared for somebody, and then the game changes. The opponent changes.
And literally football
put that
is
aside.
Such a game.
Yes.
Football is such a game where game
planning have all week,
and,
right.
And matchups.
You prepare, yes.
You know, preparing is such a big part of it. You know, on one hand, you're thinking, well, just run what you run well and impose your will, and that'll be it. And maybe that's a higher percentage of the pie now is just doing what you do well. But I know there are a lot of teams that are like, okay, what matchups can we exploit? You know, how are we going to adapt against this particular team and what they do well? It's such a big part of the equation normally. Whereas other sports, it's a little bit more like a hockey or a basketball where you know just don't have time to do that much preparation. You play so many games, right? Maybe you have 2 days before a game, and a lot of times you're playing back-to-back. You don't have time to do a whole lot of in-depth study of the other team. You just got to do what you do well.
Yep. I'm going to ask Mitch Light after we talk to Derek Mason, because we always talk to Mitch, college football, SEC, after Coach Mason, about Dabo Swinney's comments, which, you know, is coming under fire about their game against Florida State.
He's getting torched.
And you know what? This is not the only goofy statement Dabo's made here of late, and I think, you know, because of where he is in the football landscape, I think he's been getting passes, but he has come out and said some really, really outlandish and ridiculous things, and this was yet again another one, and he is really paying the price. Mike Norvell won the press conference yesterday. It wasn't Dabo Swinney, and I just think, you know, well, he has had a ton of success at Clemson. And, you know, he is a tremendous football coach and a tremendous recruiter. Those comments yesterday were asinine. I mean, I don't know where in the world he thought that was going to go over well by saying that. I mean, that you got to be kidding me.
For those that maybe didn't read into what he did, he more or less accused Florida State of ducking Clemson. And I get it. If you're Clemson, you took the time to load up the truck and get your team on a plane. You went down to Tallahassee only to find out you're not playing. And I think, according to the article I read, I was looking at the Washington Post, it cost like $300,000 to get Clemson down there and all the fees associated with that, only to find out your game is off, which, of course, did move Vanderbilt and Florida to ABC instead of ESPN.
So that is correct.
That was an interesting thing that happened on Saturday morning that you found out about. So you might have been doing some channel surfing to find that game. But sometimes you got to bite your tongue. Even if you think that that's what happened, you cannot say that in 2020 during a pandemic.
That's
exactly
ridiculous. Right. Even if there is some truth to it, or you were told certain things, like, you can't come out and say that. Like, you can't. You know how it's going to be received. I mean, you cannot do that. And you've got to be smart on that. He is smart. You've got to be smarter than that to think that's you're not going to get the backlash that he's gotten, and rightfully so. Like, I don't know how he didn't think it was going to go that way. And by the way, Mike Norvell counter with coaches are not doctors.
Coaches are not doctors. That was a great line. That's what you have to do.
Even if you think Florida State wanted no part of that game, you can't come out and say that. You can't. And I get it. You have to be frustrated with what you just laid out, that you went down there and you did all this, and you know this is not the time to be spending money like that on a game that didn't happen. I understand. There's a lot of frustrations, but 2020 is filled with frustrations. You got to be better than that to come out and say that. What?
I think there's nothing wrong with being with just basically saying this is what the doctors said, right? I don't think Mike Norvell, you know, was calling the doctors and saying, "Hey guys, is there any way that you can say we don't play?" Like I don't think he did that. Right. Football coaches don't do that. Right, there are a lot of big underdogs going into games.
I don't think doctors do that.
Exactly, the doctors, you know, are making the call based on the what they have, and that's what they decided. So that was bad. And then the athletic director, Radakovich, he doubled down. He kind of backed up Swinney. Now I can see you have to be careful how you don't want to throw your coach under the bus, but he kind of went on behind him and said, "Yeah, I don't know what's going on."
Yeah. Not a good look. All right, we'll come back, put a bow on the second hour of Darren Donick and Chase. Mike Florio to start the third hour from NBC Sports and Pro Football Talk right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, brought to you by Blue Note Juke. Joint smoother than smooth here on this Tuesday morning, soon to be afternoon. Mike Florio coming up at high noon. Also our top 10, today's top 10 in the NFL after Mike Florio. Titans and Colts on Sunday in Indy. And when you look at the injuries for the Titans currently today compared to last year and the same for the Colts, got some numbers you'd like to pass along, Willie?
Yes, particularly on the Titans. I was working with a couple people on this. Football Outsiders last year and every year at the end of the season ranks what they call adjusted games lost. So, you know, for example, Darren, if you're the starting left tackle and I am a special teams guy, right, and I just let's just take Kalu, right, as a guy, Josh Kalu. Important guy like you have out there, plays every week, but he's not as important as Roger Saffold or Taylor Lewan. Agreed?
Agreed.
So they adjust. If Kalu misses eight games and Lewan misses eight games, it's not the same thing. So they do the calculation for every team. The average was around 75.8 adjusted games lost. And the Titans had the third fewest injuries last year. Now, that surprised me. I didn't realize that they were relatively the third healthiest team in the game.
Shouldn't surprise you.
When you
make a run to the championship game, typically things go your way.
Yep, which was very different than the year before where the wheels fell off at the end of the year and they're starting, you know, Blaine Gabbert at quarterback. So last year they got fairly lucky with that. Although, you know, some would argue that being available is a skill, right? But this year, it's definitely not tracking that way. They are way down. Now, here are the numbers I wrote down so far. Lewan is going to miss at the end of the season 11 games, right? He's only played in five. He's done. Adam Humphries has missed four so far. Adoree Jackson has missed 10 so far. Still don't know when he might be available. Christian Fulton has missed five. Darrington Evans, you know, he's played in two, but has he really played in two?
Basically the season.
Yeah. Clowney has already missed two. He's on IR, so that's, you know, at least two more minimum, right? And possibly more, maybe the whole season. We don't know.
Yep.
Sembryo, is he going to play again this year? That remains to be seen. It looks like that is long term. Saffold has missed one. Brett Curran has missed three so far. Michael Pruitt, four. Jayon Brown, by the end of the year, is going to miss six because we know he's done for the year. Corey Davis and A.J. Brown, we don't think about it as much now, but they each have missed two games. So they're going to rank much higher in adjusted games lost by the end of the year. And I would guess they're going to be above average when it's all said and done. And so here's another way to look at it. They've only had, for example, Corey Davis, A.J. Brown, and Adam Humphries on the field for 2.5 games out of the 10. And yet they're still pretty productive on offense. But that's a pretty interesting stat. Davis, Brown, and Humphries on the field about 25% of the time. So that just shows you what you're trying to overcome, and that's with an offensive line that's very depleted. Mm-hmm. Here's another thing on the other side of the ball. Think about this. Malcolm Butler had the big injury that ended his season last year. Adoree Jackson hasn't played this year. So their two best corners, cover-wise, right? I mean, we know Logan Ryan was a very integral part of the defense last year, but he's really not your top corner guy, right? He was more of the blitzer, more of a nickel kind of guy. I mean, he was out there a lot. But if you want to say that Adoree Jackson and Malcolm Butler, your two best corners, they haven't been on the field together in a year. You got to go back to the Carolina game last year.
Well, Malcolm Butler was out the second half of the season, and right. Adoree Jackson hasn't played this season.
Yeah. So you got a calendar year without your two best cover guys on the field at the same time. And you add on top of that the guy that you drafted to replace Logan Ryan in Christian Fulton. He's only played half the games.
Yep.
And we don't know when he's going to be back. So they're really having to overcome a lot in terms of having the weapons out there that they need. And so that's one thing, to get to 7-3 in the situation they're in. And then you look down the down the horizon, and you ask yourself, okay, how much better is it going to get? Because it can certainly get worse, but you hope it can get a little bit better, and it doesn't get that much worse. That's the only thing you can hope for. That's why it's so essential that, can they get Saffold back? Can they get Michael Pruitt back? Can they get Humphries back? Can they get Jackson back? Can they get Fulton back? These are critical guys in terms of the entire mix, right? Clowney too. If they announced today he was out with season-ending surgery on the meniscus, we wouldn't be that surprised, right?
No, not at all.
I mean, you'd be disappointed, but you wouldn't be totally surprised. You're hoping maybe that he can get to a point where he can help you down the stretch.
Let's pause this, because I'd like to come back to this more a little bit later in the third hour. We'll have Mike Florio to start the third hour. But right now, I want to talk to you about DraftKings, America's top-rated sportsbook app. And it's going to give all you players out there the opportunity to double your money. Listen to this. Double your money if either Baltimore or Pittsburgh score a touchdown in the final game on Thanksgiving. It's a triple header, Thursday night's game. The final one will be in Pittsburgh as the Steelers host the Ravens. And all you have to do to double your money is to get a touchdown. Yeah, you need to opt in, though, first to DraftKings. Get the promotion, place your bet, and then sit back, relax, enjoy the game, and wait for somebody to score. On top of that, DraftKings Sportsbook is offering all new players a deposit bonus up to $1,000. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app. Use the promo code 1025GAME when you sign up and get this can't-miss offer. Once again, that code 1025GAME during the sign-up process for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. You must be 21 years of age or older, Tennessee only. Bonus comprised of a first deposit bonus. Deposit bonus requires 25 times playthrough. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and needs help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789.
10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needing something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.